All right, welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 145. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Hey.
We have a bunch of new to video movies today. Yeah. Starting off with, I got a chance to see Mother, the latest Darren Aronofsky film, which stars Jennifer Lawrence and Javier Bardem. It's a really weird art house film. I'm sure you've heard a little bit about it, Chris. Yep. I'm sure people have heard about it. It's, you know, a quote-unquote horror movie. What is it about? It's a couple living in a house, and the husband is an artist. Like, I think he's a poet. And people start showing up at the house, and the husband, you know, played by Javier Bardem, is more than happy to have these people there because they kind of like shower him with attention, and it's like having groupies around, essentially, you know.
Okay.
And that's like all it is. Like the movie, like, it's very weird and obtuse, and doesn't feel like it takes place in reality. Like, it feels like, you know, it is a very like art house type film, but like, it doesn't feel like real. It feels like it's art. You know what I mean? Like, it feels like it's, this is like a fantasy world that Aronofsky is going to use to make a point. 'Cause it's just weird. Like, Ed Harris shows up at the door and he's like, "Hey, I work over at the hospital." And Javier Bardem is like, "Yeah, just come on in." And like, next thing you know, the dude is staying in the house. And it's like,
that's weird.
There's no, like, Ed Harris doesn't give an explanation for why he shows up on the doorstep. Like, he just like, "Hey, yeah, I, you know, I work over here." And next thing you know, he's like eating dinner with them. And oh, stay the night. Okay. And he stays. And like, then Michelle Pfeiffer shows up and she's Ed Harris's wife, you know, like no explanation for like why, you know, and just more and more people start showing up and the house turns into a madhouse. And there's not much more plot than that. Like, that's really kind of it.
Just like weirdos keep showing up at,
yeah,
Jennifer Lawrence's and Javier Bardem's house.
Yeah, and they're like all kind of fans of Javier Bardem, and he doesn't want to get rid of them because he's this creative type who kind of feeds off of people giving a shit about his work. And like, you know, it's giving him inspiration. So despite the fact that it's getting more and more uncomfortable for his wife, she's almost secondary. Like, she's there to serve him. You know, there's a lot of meaning in it. Like, there's a lot of, like, you know, it's like a metaphor for what it's like to live with a creative person who puts their projects and their fans and stuff or whatever over the actual relationship, and how he kind of like walks all over her, right? Like,
right,
it's not hard to parse what the meaning of this is, although there's also biblical allegory, like, I guess. I don't know what it is. Like, I did not see that in the movie. Like, I saw it as more of what it's like to live with a creative person. I guess I'm a bad Catholic. I don't know. Where it goes from there, like I said, just more and more people show up, and like, it gets insane in the house. Like literally insane things. Like there's a one part where she walks into a room and there's like a war happening, like dudes hiding in foxholes, like in the middle of their house. And you're just like, okay, what? and it gets like, you know, the horror element is there all along of there being something off and why are these people showing up? It's almost like she's in a nightmare or something, like the whole movie.
Uh-huh.
But as you get closer to the end, I guess, you know, without spoiling it, it goes like pretty hardcore, I guess, horror, but like, I wasn't never scared or anything, or I didn't think it was like I don't think what little you get that is like pure, like, wow, that's crazy shit is worth sitting through. This is a 2 hour movie, full 2 hours. Like what I said, it has like a bare bones plot, like not a whole lot going on. I didn't like it. I didn't think there was enough there. And when I got to Canada, I was like, okay. And like, I kind of knew what was coming. Like, I had unfortunately spoiled myself on the movie a little bit by listening to podcasts. But I don't think going into it knowing nothing would have made me think that this was like good. I like Darren Aronofsky quite a bit. Like, I think that. You know, he's very talented. Like if you watch Requiem for a Dream, that movie kind of has a lot of energy to it and kind of leaps off the screen almost. I think The Wrestler is just like awesome movie. This is just I'm like, yeah, he's still got talent and everything, but he's using it to tell, I'm sure it's personal or whatever to him, but like I don't know. The raw, unbridled talent that I saw in Requiem for a Dream, I'll take any day over this bullshit where it's like he's, you know, way later in his career and you could tell, yeah, I mean, this guy's a real auteur still, but, you know, I don't care about any of this. It's not exciting.
It's more of a
Your earlier,
conceptual item than anything
yeah,
else.
your earlier work had all this like cool, interesting shit in it, but it was like, you know, Requiem for a Dream was also entertaining and it moved and you felt for like the characters and what was happening to them. That, you know, you've seen Requiem for a Dream? That's a movie that like I don't know, most people would categorize it, but that's a horror film. Like that's how he categorizes it. And like, I agree with that. And I felt the horror in that more because I cared about the characters more because, well, for one, they are real characters. The characters here, like, you don't really get to know anything about them. It's just she's like this put upon wife who's just like, what the fuck is going on? Like, that's it. And like, the horror in that film, like, starts from a place that feels like reality. Whereas, like I said, this just feels like a nightmare the whole time. Like, it's just this really weird dream. I can't recommend it. Like, obviously, you know, like, we are movie people, so you'll probably see it, Chris. I don't know, but like, I would be surprised if you liked it. Giving it 2 stars, just didn't do it for me. Like, I didn't hate it, but like, it just didn't do it for me, any of it. So,
Fair enough.
yeah.
That seems to be in line with how that movie played out in
Yeah.
theaters, so.
Yeah. I mean, I would have liked to have told you different because, like I said, I really do like Aronofsky and actually like everyone involved here. I like Ed Harris. I like Jennifer Lawrence.
Yeah.
There is actually some brutal violence against her in it, as well as some nudity, but it is not how you would want to see her, dude. And like I said, like the horror violence in it is not as shocking as some people will make you think, and it's not worth, I don't think, the 2 hour runtime.
Okay.
So yeah, that's going to be a theme for a lot of the movies for me this week. I guess going next to a movie that we both saw,
Yeah.
indie film that a lot of critics were pretty excited about when it came out. And one of our friends actually really liked it a lot, and so I felt bad when I told him what I thought about it. But Ingrid Goes West, Chris.
Yeah, it's the new Aubrey Plaza film. Aubrey Plaza, who is probably best known for Parks and Rec, also stars Elizabeth Olsen in it. Aubrey Plaza, though, plays Ingrid, a deranged social media stalker.
Yeah.
She has issues with attachment. She has issues with social media. Her entire existence is kind of tied up in that. And you know, they play to that a lot, but she starts out where she kind of like attacks a bride that she thought was her friend through social media. But you know, hey, not everybody you meet on the internet is your friend. Like, not everybody that likes or comments on your Instagram is.
What was it, someone she met through social media, or is it just like a, you know, like how you have friends on Facebook who like you haven't seen them since high school and shit, you know? Like, I don't know if they say either way.
I think it was just somebody random that she,
Okay.
yeah, I don't think she actually knew this person. It's just that they kind of,
Yeah, and she's like, thanks for the invite, you know, and
yeah, and like, why, like, basically, like, why would I invite you? I don't really even know you. I just commented on,
yeah.
like, your mom died or whatever, and I was like, oh, I'm sorry to hear that. And she ends up going away for a little bit, and when she gets out, she's trying to like reconnect with the her friend. It's not working. She can't get in touch with her, so she decides that she is going to find somebody new, and she travels out west to begin a new life. She takes all of the money that she received when her mom died and moves west. And she starts kind of stalking Elizabeth Olsen's character, Taylor, who is a kind of a Instagram famous person. You know, we see the cycle kind of repeat itself where she is doing things that are, you know, are destructive to her and her relationship, and she's basically lying to everyone around her.
Yeah, so she like befriends this person on social media who, you know, was
Yeah.
not aware, it was not aware that she's like a quote unquote fan.
Right.
And,
She's
you
like
know,
kidnaps her dog.
you have an idea how that will play out. Like at some
Yeah.
point, like they might figure out that something's up. Yeah.
Yeah, it's, I mean, it plays out kind of exactly how you would expect that, like,
Yeah.
at the end, like, you know, Taylor finds out that Ingrid has been a liar and has been kind of, you know, creepily stalking her all this time and doesn't want anything to do with her, and that like breaks Ingrid's heart, and she goes down a deep spiral of depression, and then I think it ends poorly.
Yeah. I don't think I hate the ending. I just don't feel, I mean, I have issues with this movie all around, but
It's dull.
yeah, like I feel like the movie doesn't, all right, we give you that setup. You have an idea what's going to happen. That happens. It doesn't go anywhere else. It doesn't
Right.
really it didn't really touch me or move me. I then the whole time I kept going like, this movie wants you to think that she's like cute and sympathetic, but her behavior, like if it were a dude, this movie would be a thriller about a psychopath.
Yeah, no, because I mean that's yeah, that's what she's doing. She's a stalker. She is
Yeah.
literally a crazy person who needs mental help, and she is stalking like Elizabeth Olsen,
But
and
yet the movie wants you to root for her. Like it's
yeah, it's really weird. Like, I don't think
yeah.
it matches because she's not relatable and she's not likable. Like, and I like Aubrey Plaza. She has a lot of charm, but she's not a likable character here. And the other side is that almost every other character is kind of a douchebag. Like, nobody is really likable
Really?
except for her boyfriend,
Yeah,
who,
'cause
like, seems to actually care about her.
Ingrid's boyfriend, right?
Yeah, Dan.
Yeah, who's played by O'Shea Jackson Jr., who
Yeah.
was in Straight Outta Compton, right?
Yeah, he's great. Like, he
He's
is.
actually like he's the bright shining light in this movie for me
Yes.
'cause like he's likable. Like he's just
Yeah,
this
he's the only
guy
likable
who
person.
he's like this guy who rents an apartment to her, and he's like this constantly vaping, like total Batman nerd. It's just a very specific character, and he's super likable. And I think O'Shea Jackson is he's pretty talented. I think this
Oh
guy might
yeah,
be a star one day.
super charming. He is the one bright spot in this because every other character is kind of an asshole and is also lying to everyone else around them. It's just that everyone else around them already knows that they're being lied to.
You don't really feel bad for Elizabeth Olsen, the victim of the stalking, because she's fake and phony too. And it's just, I'm like, where am I hanging my hat in this movie? I hung it on O'Shea Jackson, who is a very minor character in it. So I was sad to tell Matt I didn't really care for it. I didn't hate it or anything, but there was too many things that were off. There's not enough payoff for any of this. There was not enough surprises. You see where it's going right from the get-go. The ending is it's not a huge surprise. I could have wrote that ending. I didn't love it and I didn't hate it. So I'm kind of in the middle, but there's not a whole lot there for me to be like, yo, check this out. I mean, dude, I love Aubrey Plaza. I think I got a crush on her. Something about her and her crazy eyes, I fucking love. But that's most of what her just appearance and O'Shea Jackson's performance is really what kind of got me through a movie that I thought was kind of limp.
Yeah, totally. And yeah, I just wish that, I don't know, the ending is just kind of to me it was just very cynical. We're not going to actually get her any help. We're just going to can keep enabling her cycle of destruction.
Well, the movie has a problematic position on what she's doing. It knows what she's doing is wrong, but I think it's just because it's Aubrey Plaza, it's totally cute and you should be on her side. And when it's like, no, her behavior is completely fucked, and everyone else in this movie is also unlikable. So it's just like, I don't care. I don't want to see her. I kind of want to spoil the end of the movie, but it's almost not even worth it. It's just, I thought it's kind of predictable. Once she starts kind of filming herself, I'm like, oh yeah, I know exactly where this is going. And
Right, they're gonna wake her up and oh, and it just turned out that the nice guy is the one that saved her, and but then instead of kind of,
She's rewarded. She's rewarded. And she's rewarded for being more authentic than a lot of people on social media.
sure.
But that said, like you said, she needs help. Also, it was not a surprise. I was just like, yeah, I guess that makes sense, I guess, for the ending, I guess. I didn't care. This does not pass the who cares test. It's just kind of like it gets kudos for me from for trying to have something to say about social media and people's addiction to it.
Yeah, I just wish it went a little bit farther,
Yeah,
than like.
it thought more deeply about it than just yeah, people are hooked to their phones and interacting with screens all day and none of this shit's real and blah blah blah. I get it.
That lunch photo you took, it's just a stage. There's nothing actually behind it.
Oh, and I mean, like I said, kudos to it for all that. But another funny thing, I'm watching this movie, and then the first 2 minutes, I was like, Simpsons did it, but not Simpsons. I said, Black Mirror did it. Black Mirror did an episode very reminiscent of this called Nosedive that, in the course of 50 minutes, was a billion times better. Black Mirror does an episode about a woman who is obsessed with her social media ranking, because in the future that's how people judge each other. Say you meet someone on the street, you can see above their head how popular they are. So, And it's about the whole episode is about her trying to maintain her social media kind of popularity, and things go very badly. And it actually ends at a wedding where she flips out on somebody who barely knows her. So I was like, yeah, this was a Black Mirror episode, cool. And then but then it's just kind of like this limp comedy that is nothing like that. Like I said, it gets some credit for me for like the social media aspect. It gets credit for like a cast I really like. I like Elizabeth Olsen. I like her
Yeah.
boyfriend too. He was on Black Mirror. He was in. He's been in a bunch of shit now. Like I said, O'Shea Jackson. But yeah, just overall, it just didn't do it for me. I don't know. I feel like we're on the same page on this,
Yeah, it's
pretty
just
much.
it's kind of just a thing that happened that I watched.
And you won't ever watch again, I'm sure, or think about, I won't think about this 6 months
No,
from now.
I will forget it by the
Yeah.
very quickly.
I felt like there was one other thing I wanted to say, but I forget now. I'm gonna give it, for as mean as I'm being, I'm gonna give it a 3. It's a low 3, though. It's just like, yeah, it's passable.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with it.
Yeah. It's too bad because, like I said, I really like her. And I mean, I guess we should know. I mean, we both were kind of lukewarm on it, but it sits at 86% on Rotten Tomatoes. So critics generally liked it. But then again, a positive review on Rotten Tomatoes would be the score that we just gave it. So I don't know.
Yeah. A
But
tepid win, right? Like,
yeah, it's like you can't always trust that percentage, but I guess that goes without saying at this point. I guess moving along to another movie that you can tell I'm super excited about. Another actress I love, Kristen Stewart, who I think a lot of people don't appreciate. I think she's a really good actress. I just like Aubrey Plaza. I love her. Like, I think she's very attractive. And I was excited to see this movie that not a whole lot of people are talking about outside of critics because it's supposedly a horror movie.
okay.
It's called Personal Shopper, from French director Olivier Assayas. I'm sure I'm butchering his last name. Premise of this film. I guess to not beat around the bush, the premise is Kristen Stewart is this young American who is living and working in Paris because her brother died there. And she is a medium and she is in, so she went to Paris and she's working there and she's waiting for a sign from her brother to tell her that basically that the things that she sees as a medium is real. Like she's waiting for a sign from her brother that there's an afterlife and shit like that.
Okay.
The funny thing about that is you don't know that premise until about 30 minutes into this hour and 40 minute movie. Like it spends
Weird.
it's the typical indie movie where it's like, hey, we're not gonna explain shit to you, and you're just gonna have to pay attention, soak it in, figure it out. Like we're not gonna spell things out, but it's like you spend a lot of the first 30 minutes just kind of like sorting out, okay, she's shopping. Oh, she's shopping for some celebrity. Oh, okay, her job is that's her job. And that's where you get the title of the film, Personal Shopper. Like that's, she works for some model or actress, they don't really tell you, who doesn't have the time to do shopping of her own or, doesn't want to get bothered by people. So this is her job. She goes out and picks out dresses for her and this and that. And you're just like, okay, well, like what the point? Like you're watching it and you're watching it, like, all right, when are we getting the premise? Because like watching her shop and watching her like go around Paris is like not super interesting. Like nothing's happening here, right? Then it finally drops the premise on you and you're like, okay, That's interesting. And then she's like on a train or something. I forgot where she was going on a train, somewhere. And she starts to get texts from an unknown number. And that's when the movie started to get like really intriguing. And I'm like really kind of on board. And I'm like, oh, what is this? And it's like this some guy or something like texting her and like, hey, you're on your way to this place on the train, aren't you? And she's like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I know. Like, when you get to this, when you get to where you're going, why don't you go to this hotel? And you're just like, who is this person? Like, why won't they? And she'll be like, why are you, like, who are you? Why are you messing with me? Like, the person won't answer her question. They'll, like, say something else, like, disturbing. And there's a good 25 minutes in the middle here that is really gripping and suspenseful and interesting and feels fresh and new. And it uses like new technology in a way that I'm not sure I've seen before. Like it for like 25 minutes, you're watching a text conversation on an iPhone. Like, yeah, you're getting shots of like her on the train looking around and shit, but like, most of it is you're reading this back and forth between two people, and it's just silent. You're just hearing woo, woo, like the text going back and forth, And I like for everything that I will say about this movie after this, I give it actual props for that. Like, it's doing something new in the genre there with the texting back and forth, I thought. The problem is that, like, not to spoil it completely, but that has nothing to do with the premise that you're offered 30 minutes in. Like, for a while, you're like, wait, is this the ghost of her brother? Or is this like a ghost, like some other ghost that's like fucking with her? Or like, what is this? Then you get to the end and you find out it had nothing to do with any of that. But then it goes back to the story about how she's like grieving for her brother and she's waiting for a sign and, just trying to deal with all that shit. And so it feels disjointed. Like, you get this half hour of nothing at the beginning. You get this really gripping part in the middle that actually has nothing to do with the beginning or end. And I thought like the final moment of the film was kind of interesting, but I felt like it didn't give me enough to really care about before then. Like, it was too much of a project to watch up until that. And like, the ending is not like super exciting or anything either. It's a typical indie film. Like, it ends in the middle of a moment where you're like, what is that? What does that mean? But it's just like, and I'm okay with an ambiguous ending like that, or like, kind of reminds me of the end of Take Shelter, where you're like, oh, something's about to happen now. Like, oh shit. And it ends. Like, that's fine, but like, it didn't build up to that. It's just like, okay, well, here's another thing. Like I said, it's disjointed, it's kind of boring. Don't really feel like you get a window into some of the people's lives. I mean, you understand like kind of what she's going through, I guess, by the end of it, but it's just the movie's hard to get into. It's slow to start. It has a pretty interesting, like, just kind of like experimental middle where it's like, hey, we're gonna try something on film that you haven't seen before. We're gonna do a text conversation that is ultra creepy. But then the outcome of that, like, also the explanation for like who was texting her and all that shit is like kind of like, what? Okay, I guess. Like,
Just kind of comes out of nowhere.
yeah, but like, oh, and like, there is a part too early on where she is like staying in the house where her brother died, and she does see a ghost, like, and it's fucking cool and it's creepy and it feels like straight out of a horror film. The ghost looks fucking awesome. The scene is pretty scary, and then it goes into this whole text part, like, kind of right after that. I'm like, I was like really on board with it, but I'm just like, by the end, nothing panned out right. I don't feel like. Now, this is another one that like critics generally liked. I think it's I want to say it's at 79. Yeah, 79% on Rotten Tomatoes. There are critics who, like, I watched what the Flick review of this, and they all gave it over a 9 out of 10. They said it was one of the best films of the year, an amazing horror film, right up there with Get Out. I've seen this a lot of critics, so it's in like their top 5 of the year. So again, it this is another case of us breaking with the majority here, or me at least breaking with the majority. I don't know how you would feel about it. I love Kristen Stewart. I love horror, you know that. I wanted to love this movie. I just felt like it was disjointed and boring and didn't give us enough by the time it was over. Just, you know, despite the fact that there's like some really cool shit in there, like it didn't work for me. It's another 2. I feel bad, but
No, I mean, hey, they get what they earn.
I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe we're crazy. I don't know, but yeah, that's it. I'd be interested to hear what you thought of it. I wouldn't be surprised if you agreed with me, though. I was actually kind of livid after the movie. If you recall, I was like texting you, like,
Yeah.
yeah, don't watch this movie. It fucking sucks. Like, I was going on my typical rant about, like, this is why people hate critics. It's just like it is. It's like that's the type of movie that, you know, someone might watch based on a critic saying it's one of the best horror films of the year, and someone would watch it and be like, dude, this is why I don't listen to critics. It's fucking artsy fartsy bullshit that goes nowhere. So, I don't need to go into that whole full rant, but yeah, I kind of, I'm gonna have to almost agree with the layman here and say, yeah, no, fuck that shit. What else did you see, Chris?
I saw the new Steven Soderbergh movie, Logan Lucky.
Yes. I looked at this.
Channing Tatum, the fuck's his name? Adam Driver. They played the Logan brothers. It's a really weird setup. Channing Tatum has a gimp leg. I guess he hurt it playing football, and his brother, Adam Driver, is a war vet who lost his arm in either Afghanistan or Iraq. They're both handicapped in some way. And at the beginning, Channing Tatum kind of loses his job. His wife is giving him, his ex-wife or ex-girlfriend, who is the mother of his kid, is giving him a hard time. So they decide, he decides that he's going to rob the NASCAR
Yeah.
vault at
So
the
it's like hillbilly
Hillbilly
Ocean's 11.
Ocean's 11. Yeah,
Yeah.
so like you got those two. They recruit James Bond, who I'm blanking on right now, Daniel
Daniel
Craig.
Craig, yeah.
Yeah, they bring him in. They bring in Riley Keough, who is their little sister. They bring in a couple, like I think it's Daniel Craig's brothers. They bring in a bunch of them. So there's like some people, and they go through a setup on how they're going to kind of like bust in, get all the stuff out of the vault, and make off with the money. But it's really dumb because they also have to bust both Daniel Craig and Adam Driver out of jail to do it. So all of that's kind of fun, but there's nothing kind of moving in it. It's just a bunch of like stupid, ridiculous scenes held together by charming performances.
Does it feel, I guess, does it feel like everyone's having fun in the movie, and are you having fun along with them, or no?
Of fun, like they just seem like it's very similar to like what Soderbergh did with the Ocean's movies, but this is to me more kind of like Ocean's 12-ish, where it just kind of these people are just making this movie because it's fun.
Yeah.
But like I don't know, like the way it all plays out towards the end is like this is kind of dumb. Like the actual heist isn't that exciting. Like that's one of the
Yeah.
things that like Ocean's 11, I think Ocean's 13. I haven't seen Ocean's 13 in a while, but I think both of them do really well is how they plan out the heist and you see how it kind of all plays out. Whereas this, it seems very like, I mean, you just kind of said it. It's Hillbilly, Ocean's 11, and the setup is very haphazard. It's just like a lot of like circumstantial bullshit that happens to get through it, and it's like everyone is really dumb.
Yeah, so it's like an idiots doing
Yeah.
crime film. But are they stumbling into success or failure? I mean, you don't have to spoil all the thing for me, but
No,
is it
so.
like what's their trajectory? Are they like stumbling into better, like,
Yeah,
or are they fucking it up more and more?
so it seems like they're like at every corner it seems like they're messing up, but they keep stumbling the right way.
See, this sounds fun to me. I don't know.
Is kind of fun. It's I wish it was about 20 minutes shorter. It's 2 hours long. There's a weird like tertiary storyline with a race car owner and his driver that makes zero sense. Like it's not needed at all. Like they drag out some of the stuff like where you could have tightened it up a bit and had way better setup with the planning of the heist, the actual pulling off of the heist. Instead, kind of at the end, it's like, oh, well, we're gonna cycle through how we actually did everything, like the way Saw does it. And at the end of the movie, it's like, oh,
Here's all the things you didn't see.
yeah.
Like,
And it was like, well, the reason we didn't see it was because you didn't really like
didn't show us it.
show
Like,
it
we were
to us. Like,
blind. Yeah. I don't like when they do that like that.
and some of it works, some of it doesn't. I think that, if you enjoy like a heist movie, and you do, so I think you'll get enough out of this.
I love dumb criminal movies too. Like,
It's like
more, even more than crime thrillers, I love dumb ass criminals. I mean, fucking Fargo, like shit like that. Like, it's just my alley,
Channing Tatum and Adam Driver are really good.
Yeah.
Riley Keough is really good. Daniel Craig is hamming it up in this film. Like he is having a blast.
Like, I get to finally have fun again.
Yeah, like I don't have to play it serious. Like everyone else in this movie is acting like a complete jackass, doing like terrible accents. I'm gonna play this shit up. It's fun enough. Like I just, I said, like I wish it wasn't quite as long as it was, and I came away going, all right, that's all right. Like, but it's not something I'm ever gonna go back to. But I've spent worse 2 hours over the past week, so.
Yeah, a lot of that this week.
I'm gonna go with a 3 on it. Just I was kind of hoping for more, being as Soderbergh kind of like came out of retirement for this and.
Yeah. I'm still kind of interested to see it, but maybe won't be racing to see it before end of the year.
Yeah, I don't know if it's gonna like end up on
Yeah.
anybody's best of list. It's a fun enough movie.
Yeah. All right. The last, I guess, full film I saw in the last week is An Inconvenient Truth or Inconvenient Sequel,
Okay.
Truth to Power, which is a sequel to An Inconvenient Truth. I guess I'll preface this by saying I was kind of half watching it because I was like doing other things like moving laundry along and doing dishes and whatnot. But like, I think I have a good enough grasp on what happens in this movie to give my opinion. And I guess I should preface by saying I thought that An Inconvenient Truth was a pretty dull documentary about an important subject. So.
I I have seen it, but wasn't it like a lot of like almost like a PowerPoint presentation at points, like a lot of like Al
It
Gore
was
standing
mostly
up and like showing charts and shit.
yeah. It was mostly a film version of his lecture. So, take that as you will. Like that's what I think that movie won Best Documentary and like shit. It's like I don't know, dude. I watch a lot of documentaries and the best you could say for it, at least in my opinion, of the first one is that it was about an important subject. And
Yeah, it won best documentary.
I mean, I think it wins based on the subject matter. It doesn't win based on how good the movie is because it's like I said, it's just it was watching his lecture. This one is more cinematic because we're not watching his lecture for the whole time, although there are snippets of him, lecturing people. It's more kind of about like what's happened since then and what he's been up to since then. I'll give major props to Al Gore. He seems like a good guy. Like he is a guy who has been working nonstop behind the scenes on this issue and pushing world leaders, etc., towards like actually addressing it. Despite the fact that like he would be well within his right to be pissed off at the world and never do anything again after what happened to him in 2000. Like he should have won that election and he had to concede for the better of the country because that was a time when politicians still might have thought about what was better for the country. But he didn't let it get to him. He has spent the majority of the last 20 years working on this issue. And the movie is kind of largely about that. It's kind of about how like it's like how this dude is like sitting there like setting up meetings with people and working on it. And it kind of it spends a lot of the first half going, hey, remember that shit that we warned you about in the first movie? And like people laughed at us. Well, here's Miami being flooded. Here's this, here's that, here's these fucking fires all over. It's like everything that they said was gonna happen and people mocked them for. Like there is a part where he's giving a lecture and he's talking about how in the first film they said that like where Ground Zero in New York was will be flooded by water. And like I guess at the time he was heavily criticized for saying that, right?
Right.
And guess what? Fucking site got flooded. So it's a lot like a lot of the first half is like being like, I told you so. And then a lot of the second half is showing what he's been up to since. And it kind of like is culminates with the Paris Agreement, which is sad because he put all that work into it and all these world leaders are on board. And now we are the only country in the world that is not on board with that, because we have a dummy running the country. And it does make note of that at the very end. I mean, the movie came out right around when Trump was deciding not to be part of the Paris Agreement. Like I said, I guess this one's slightly more cinematic than the first one,
Okay.
but it's also entirely unnecessary. Whereas I think there's a good argument to make that the first one was necessary, right?
It's like an inconvenient and unnecessary sequel.
Yeah, like it's just kind of going, hey, Al Gore is right, and like, hey, just so you know, Al Gore is like a fucking good dude, man. Like, and like, it got me to say that. Like, I said it to you right now. Like, he seems like a really good guy. Like he seems genuine about it. Like, and something he really cares about and he knows about. He just seems like to me, like, I mean, he's not a politician anymore. He's just like a citizen trying to do shit, right? So, like, props to him. And I agree with the message of both of the movies, but I find them both really dull, and I'm like a documentary fan, so it's I'm kind of like gonna fall on it kind of how I would about the first one. It's like, yeah, this is like important stuff, but not a super exciting documentary by any means at all. And like I said, this one is also unnecessary because the point is like, if you want to see the point of the movie, watch the first one. So,
Right.
which I also think is just like go read a Wikipedia thing that tells you global warming is real. So I'm gonna give it 3 stars. It is what it is.
All right.
What were you gonna say?
I mean, there's plenty of documentation out there on global warming, so you don't have to go watch an Al Gore lecture from 2005.
Yeah, don't go listen to what Fox News has to say or
No,
Donald Trump has to
please
say.
don't. Please don't listen to any of
Go
that.
look up, literally anything but that, because everyone's in agreement it's real. Hey, turn on the news. You see California on fire? You see all the fucking crazy fucking like biblical storms we had this year? You're not supposed to have 100-year storms every year, so, or multiple ones within a month of each other. So
Yeah, they're supposed to be every 100 years.
it's like it's
Literally.
literally yeah, it's like it's happening now. So, good for this. I can't say bad things about a movie that's like saying, hey, we should do something about this, but it's also not like if you want to see a documentary to be entertained, which I do, I watch documentaries like I would a fictional film. I want to be told a cool story or whatever.
Right, like it, sometimes you're looking for information on a subject, sometimes you're looking for, an interesting story, but at the heart of it, it's still filmmaking and it should still be entertaining.
It still has, they still have narrative arcs to them. It's weird. It's been a weird year for documentaries for me. We have a category in our Best of the Year stuff that I added called Best Documentary. And I'm like, I don't know. There hasn't been a lot. And like, I love documentaries, but there hasn't been one this year that got like a bunch of hype or anything, like, or even just one I saw that I was like, wow, I really love that. Whereas like last year, like even like what was that one last year about the two girls? It was called like something and something, and it was about like date rape in high school and shit. Like
I know
that
what you're
didn't
talking
even.
about. I don't
You know
remember.
what I'm talking about, right? You saw it. Like,
Yeah.
there was nothing even on that level, and that movie did not make my top 10 last year. I thought about it; it might have been my top 10 this year. Like that movie would have been, like 2017 would have been a better environment for that movie to come out in terms of,
Oh yeah.
like it might have got more traction.
I am looking over my list of 2017 movies, and I don't think outside of the Carrie Fisher, Debbie Reynolds thing HBO did at the beginning of the year. I don't think I have seen a documentary this year, which is weird. I am not, as big a documentary fan as you
Yeah,
are,
but
but I watch them,
yeah,
and I have
that's the thing
not
that's
seen one this
weird.
year.
Usually, there's at least like a bunch that will pop up on Netflix or whatever. I will recommend once again to you, Chris, to watch The 13th. That's a very good movie on Netflix, but it's not this year, so it doesn't qualify for year-end stuff.
Right.
But I will reiterate, that's like a really good movie. So. Going forward, we are both very excited for Star Wars.
Yes.
It's like very like so close we could taste it.
Yeah, it's for me, it is literally less than 24 hours away.
Wait, you're going on Wednesday?
Tomorrow's Wednesday. No.
You
Yes.
got yourself, you got
Shit.
ahead of
I thought we were Wednesday. God
yourself.
damn it. I moved the whole day up. All right. I'm less than 48 hours away.
You're
Shit.
just like,
I was
please
all
get me to
excited. I
Star
was like,
Wars.
yes. Oh, it's going to be great. That would be really
Get
depressing tomorrow,
out
though, when
here.
I'm like at the theater, like, your ticket's
Well,
tomorrow, sir.
hey, if it makes you feel better, you're like 48 hours ahead of me because I won't be seeing it until the Sunday after it comes out. So the whole internet will have spoiled it and everything by then.
Yeah, I kind of looked over. I've seen a couple tweets from people that have seen it. I did read one review, and I decided after that I'm not reading anymore. I shouldn't even have read that one, but and it didn't spoil anything. It just like I don't care what they have to say.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. Yeah, right. Like you just kind of want to hear that it's like really awesome. Right? You want to hear the hype, kind of.
Right. It's like that's kind of where it's at. Like, I just want to be validated that, like, this thing that, like,
It's not gonna suck.
right,
Like,
because, like, I love the Star Wars franchise, and, like, I would be really upset if they're like, oh no, this one's a garbage pit. Like, I'll still go see it, but.
I am not like, you know, we've talked about this before, but like, I like Star Wars, but I'm not like, I'm definitely not in the camp like you, where it's like, it's your favorite franchise, right? Like,
Yeah.
yeah. So like, I'm not like that, and I've gotten into some trouble on Twitter about it lately because I'm just like, let's do a little quick little Star Wars discussion as we're heading into this, because like, I'm of the opinion that The Force Awakens is the best one.
Okay.
I don't think that you're of the same opinion. I don't know.
No,
Okay.
it's a very good Star Wars film.
Do you think, do you think that it is a crazy opinion to have? Like, is that like out there?
No, I think that's perfectly fine. Like, I mean, one, anybody can say whatever one's their favorite. I'm sure there are people that are like, oh, Revenge of the Sith is my favorite because that's what they grew up with or whatever. But yeah, I could definitely see like, you know what? No, like this is, it's modern filmmaking. It's Star Wars at its core. I could see somebody saying that Force Awakens is the best or their favorite of the franchise.
And I think it, like, Aaron is just like, he's completely dismissive of my point on that, and he'll go on these stupid rants about, well, not stupid rants, he's trying to make a point. Like, I said that, yeah, it's got better pacing, it feels more modern, the special effects are better, this and that. And he's like, well, by that logic, then any movie now is better than, like, Annabelle Creation is better than The Shining because the effects are better, and this and that. I'm like, I get what you're saying, but at the end of the day, for me, like, if I'm gonna watch a Star Wars movie now, I'd rather see that one. Like, I'd rather see The Force Awakens. I just feel like it moves better. Like, I think the characters are better. Like, and I will say blasphemous things. Like, I think Kylo Ren's a better villain than Darth Vader. Like, I love the fact that he's just like this fucking emo dork. He's like a wannabe. He wants to be what Darth Vader was, but he's not. And like, to me, that's more interesting because that makes him actually a character. Whereas, like, Darth Vader in the original trilogy, there's some development with him. You're like, oh, he's his father, right? But it's like, he's not much of a
Well,
character. He's just the ultimate evil for the most part.
yeah, or right up until like the last 40 minutes of the original trilogy, he is like the big badass. Like, you know, yes, he's trying to turn Luke in Empire, but he's trying to turn Luke and overtake the Emperor by bringing Luke on. Not like, hey, Luke, you're my son. Like, no, like I can get an apprentice too, and we can take down the Emperor, and I can be king. And it's not until like, you know, Luke and him start to explore their non-existent relationship that like it, you know th there seems to be some remorse in Vader and Anakin, you know, that ties back and is like, all right, maybe I made some bad shit choices, like.
But like, I don't know. I think from the get-go, I guess at least, Kylo Ren is more interesting, like, because
He's
I don't know.
human.
I think, yeah, like he's pathetic, kind of. Like, he's just someone who's really like dying to prove himself. And I'm like, I don't know. It's more interesting to me. And some people will say, oh, when he took his mask off, I guess it's like Adam Driver's face. Like, he just looks like a douche. I'm like, I guess that's cool too, though. I like, that's a
Right.
great touch. He looks like a fucking douche.
There's a
Like,
reason he wears the mask, because like it inspires fear. Like
like, without it, he just looks like a whiny brat. Like, there's just so many things like that that I love about it. I love the fact that, you know, you have 40 years of history with these characters coming in that you haven't seen them in the last 20, 30 years, where it's just like, oh my God, you know, Princess Leia and Han Solo are old now. Like,
yeah, that's something that, you know,
you can't manufacture in the original trilogy. You just can't.
yeah, because they're brand new characters, you're just learning about them.
Like, the only thing you had going for it is Obi-Wan was like a known actor at that time, right? And he was like older. So like, for people at that day, we're like, oh, it's what's his name? I forgot the actor's name.
Sir Alec Guinness.
Sir, goodness, I'm sorry. But like, and I guess the more blasphemous thing that I'll say on top of that is like, I think I could come to that conclusion that The Force Awakens is my favorite because I don't hold the original trilogy in as high a regard as some people. Like, certainly not as much as you and not as much as a lot of people I know. I think, like, that's. I'm not trying to piss you off. I'm just trying to tell you,
No,
like,
but I also didn't look at the prequels as things that like ruined my childhood, right? Like,
Yeah, I didn't either. I think they're bad. I don't think they're very good movies, but like I look at the original trilogy as like really great kids films that came out at that time. I don't look at them as like these cinematic fucking masterpieces that are like the best films of all time, like a lot of people do. And I don't know, I'm not putting words in your mouth saying that you're
right.
like that too. It's just that's your favorite franchise. That's cool.
Yeah, I mean they're
But
my favorite movies. I wouldn't say they're the best made movies, but by far, like
like, I think people are ascribing way more character depth and shit to them than is actually there on the screen in those first three films. I think that there's pacing problems with them. I think it's something I don't like to be mean about. I actually prefer old special effects usually, but like some of those stuff looks dated. Like the Tauntauns to me, like they don't look good, I don't think now. Like,
I think that's fair. That's fine.
It's not me picking on it. It's just me
Right.
trying. It's me trying to explain how I can come to the conclusion that I
No,
like
and
Force Awakens better.
I think that's perfectly fine to come to that
Yeah.
conclusion too. Like,
Well, thank you.
yeah,
I
I don't have any problem with that. Like
just felt like I had to defend my opinion on it a little
yeah, no, feel free. Like
But I
I
also feel like I sound like mean when I say that, where I'm like, they're just fucking kids movies that people, like. I'm not picking on people for loving them either, but I'm just like I don't agree with how people feel about them in some ways.
But they are kids' movies. They were
They
like
are. That's
they're very
exactly what they are.
clearly designed after like 50 serials and
Yes.
like they were designed like and a lot of like in Lucas's head was basically he made toys and like filmed them like and a lot
Yeah,
of.
and like we could get to like my last part of it, which is I've come to the conclusion over the last couple of years that out of the original trilogy, my favorite is Return of the Jedi. It moves quicker, there's cool monsters and shit, and like Aaron will mock me for that. Like, oh, you just like all the dumb shit. I'm like, dude, it's the best at being what it is supposed to be, a fun kids movie. Like, that one's the
Yeah,
most fun. Link
it's
is
where
badass, or Luke is badass in it. Like,
it's where Lucas finally was able to like and I mean at that point, yeah, he had proved himself, right? Like, Star
yeah.
Wars was a huge like changed the industry and
Yeah.
then he did it again with Empire Strikes Back. So then like he just like closed it out with like a fun fucking like throw shit against the wall. Like everything is there. It's all nuts. Like you got
It's
fucking
all payoff.
yeah.
It's all payoff. It's like, guess what? Right at the beginning, Luke is the ultimate badass, and he's gonna come and fuck shit up. And like, I don't know. There's not like a boring part in it. Like even the very beginning, it's like the whole Sarlacc pit shit. Like that shit's fun. And like, I don't know. I guess what
Yeah,
like Empire starts with like the Battle of Hoth, right? Like so, I guess it's kind of exciting at the beginning, but not as exciting.
It starts with the Battle of Hoth, but remember like the first like 20, 25 minutes of that is Luke at like basically he gets abused by the Wampa and Han goes out looking for him. So like you don't actually like the action doesn't actually start in that movie
Yeah.
for like 25, 30 minutes.
It's like a
That's
lot of
when the
like
battle
looking through
starts.
it's like a lot of through like looking through scopes and shit, right? Like at
Yeah.
the beginning there. Like
And then
it's like
there's
everyone remembers the ending of it. Everyone remembers oh
the
so
battle,
like
yeah, like the AT-ATs, the snow speeders, like
Well,
they all remember that.
I'm saying the film as a whole too. People
Oh
remember the ending. Like, yeah, okay, yeah. I mean, but it's like a downer. And I know that's what it's supposed to be. Like
yeah.
and I
Everyone
just
remembers the ending of that film wrong too, because they always say, "Luke, I am your father." Like that's not the line.
What does he say?
He's like, "No, I am your
Oh,
father." Like he's.
doesn't he search? Doesn't he say search your feelings? You know it to be true, or like something like that? Like the
After
equivalent.
that, yeah.
Oh, after that, okay.
Yeah.
Wait, so all right. So what's the exact line? It's not Luke, I am your father. It's what?
It's no, I am your father. He's like, did Obi-Wan ever tell you like what happened to to your father, and he's like, he told me enough. He told me that you killed him, and he's like, no, I am your father. Like, but everyone's always like, Luke, I am your father. Selective.
Yeah, so I guess out of the original trilogy, my ranking personally would go Jedi, Empire, and then Star Wars at the bottom, New Hope at the bottom.
Sure.
I don't know about you. Like you, how's your rewatch going? Have you gone through those yet?
So I haven't watched Force Awakens yet. I have watched everything else.
One through six, yeah. So like, how's your like one? How's it just in general? How is your rewatch going? You having fun with it? And two, like, how would you rank the? I guess like you do the whole series if you want. I just disregard the first three, like to.
Well, so like I th there are huge pacing issues in each of the first three, the prequels, episodes 1, 2, and 3. There are also amazing fucking like scenes in there. Lucas is not a great director of actors, but he knows how to frame shots and do action like few others. Like that, those films are now. We're talking about almost 20 years since The Phantom Menace, and some of that stuff still looks phenomenal. Like, which
And
is amazing.
well, yeah, like and despite the fact that he's like telling very archetypal stories that have been told since the beginning of time, basically, he did imagine like a whole new world with like all these different alien breeds and like and races and shit. And it's just like that is, I think, the most amazing part about it. It's like this guy dreamt up a whole world, you know?
But then he made kids movies where a lot of like for the prequels he made kids movies where like a lot of the shit happens in governmental and like bureaucratic
Really dry
discussions.
and
Like,
boring.
yeah, it's like when you finally get down to it, when you get to the action that involves Anakin and Obi-Wan and when they're fighting Sith
Fucking
lords and
Yoda flipping around.
That is still like I know people
Yeah.
like to make fun of it now, but
I think it's cool.
it's still a fun scene, and that scene is one of the best moments I've ever had in a theater where the crowd just went nuts when
When Yoda fights, what's his
yeah
name?
like he because he's like he hobbles in with his cane and then he drops his cane and like
Yeah,
pulls his
yeah.
lightsaber and the fucking crowd went nuts like as soon as like that happened. Like, holy shit, this is going down. Like it's you can't remanufacture that either. Like, that's something that, like, hey, all these people that grew up watching the original trilogy know Yoda is like this frail Jedi, and holy shit, like he's been fucking faking it all this time. Like,
Well, like, you know, part of I like I said, I disregard those first three. I think they're not very good movies, like the prequels.
sure.
But part of what allows me to accept people liking them, and part of what allows me to enjoy parts of them, is the same belief that I have about the original trilogy. It's like, dude, these are just kids like movies. Like, yeah, like the politics shit is super boring and sucks in those prequels, but like, yeah, there's fun shit, and if you enjoy parts of the prequels, that's
Yeah,
fine.
like
Like,
it's really hard to deny that like the Duel of the Fates, the fight with Qui-Gon and Obi-Wan against Darth Maul isn't fucking phenomenal like lightsaber work. Like,
and John Williams score, dude. Like, do
yeah.
do 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 do
That's
do. That
great.
shit's fucking great. Like that song, I used to fucking drive around blasting that song with the windows open in my car. Like, just it's because you feel like a badass when it's playing.
Yeah, and what's crazy about it is like, and I've criticized Lucas's editing and his pacing in his films, but when he gets to an action scene, he knows how to space stuff out. He knows how to intercut it with other scenes to deflate the action a little bit, to deflate like the tension
Yeah.
just enough, bring it to something else, and then bring it back. Like he does know how to film an action scene like few other people, but yeah, the prequels are not great. I am
I guess what I think they lack, for from the original is like the original trilogy had like characters that were like super likable, and like they had like the films as a whole had charisma to them or whatever. And yeah, like the prequels are a lot of kind of it feels lifeless and really dry and boring, and like this politics shit that I don't know how he expected kids to follow. It's weird because he like I don't know if that part was supposed to be written to like the fans of the original, like going, "Hey, we're gonna fill all this info out for you." And it's like, I don't need any more, really. Like, just show me Vader becoming fucking evil and shit. And like, I don't know. I don't know how you do those prequels.
Well,
In a lot of ways, you do them better, but.
there are ways to do them better, but I also think, like, ultimately,
They are hindered
why.
by the fact that they're prequels, I think.
Yeah, because why The Force Awakens works so well is we don't know what's coming, right?
I
Like,
mean,
so.
it ended up being A New Hope, a kind of, right? Again, but like you didn't know that, like you know what I mean? Like you just don't know the roadmap for that. You don't know
We
Kylo
don't.
Ren. You don't
We
know.
also don't know where Rey is, like where her arc is going. We don't know where Kylo Ren's arc is going, where Finn's arc is going. Like,
And
yeah,
I
we,
love all those characters. Like that's I didn't need to stress that. Like I love all the new
they created
characters.
new characters that we care about. The problem with the prequels is that you know Anakin's going to turn bad. Like, there's no getting around that. You know that he is going to turn into an evil fucker, and become the ultimate evil in the galaxy. Next to the Emperor, who is even worse, and you know that Obi-Wan is going to live. Know that they are friends, and that he trains him. So,
And those things are impossible to get around. Like that's just the way it is. I mean, granted, there's ways to work within those confines to do something way more interesting than what he
sure.
did, but at the end of the day, like it's whatever. I don't own those movies. I will probably never watch them again. Although I have to say, like, I always kind of liked the third one, and like once he does, like, yeah, you know where it's heading. But once you get to like the last half hour of the third one, it's like an emotional wallop, dude. Like they're fucking killing Padawans and fucking, you
Oh yeah.
know what I mean? Like it's fucking grim and dark, and you know people laugh about the no, like it's a huge meme and the people make fun of it. But like, I don't know, dude. It all worked for me when I saw that one. I was like, you know what? He redeemed himself on this one. I remember at the time, at least when it came out, I was just like. And to this day, I'm like, it's that one's not like I would watch that one again, I
He
guess. I just wouldn't
made
watch Clone Attack of the Clones or Phantom Menace probably,
a really dark movie. Like,
especially for like it's still PG, but it's like, dude, like you're murdering children and you killed all the Jedi.
but yeah,
I dig that.
they are what they are. I don't dislike watching them. Like, I would rather watch the original trilogy, but they're fun enough, I guess. Like, the action still works. It's solid. The music is great as always. So I watched them, and then I watched Rogue One, which I really like that film. I don't know these people that are like, Rogue One's the best Star Wars movie. I think
Yeah,
those people are crazy, but
I was kind of riffing on that. Yeah.
I having just watched it again, I was like, yeah, I like this more than I liked it a lot last year, but like, I think I like it more. Like, the more I see it, the more I'm liking it. Like, I pick up other things about it, and
I like it more than I thought I did, but like our friend or Pete from Perfectly Sane. He's like, you could see that it was like a chop job. And I was like, yeah, you could kind of see the seams on it. Like, it doesn't feel like a unified vision to me always. But,
yeah,
it's for me, it's real low. Like, but I did like it more the second time I watched it.
I will say that, like, I think that it is a little choppy up until they get the Scarif, which
Well,
is,
then it's just a blast. It's
yeah,
just like
it's
a
fucking,
fucking
that is
war.
like,
It's like Saving Private Ryan.
yeah, it is great Star Wars at that point. Like, but yeah, like, just like with Revenge of the Sith or Attack of the Clones, like, you have to fight through some, like, stuff to get to it, but
And just like those movies, you kind of know where it's
You know
going.
where, yeah,
Like,
you know where it's going to end because that movie significantly backs right up into A New Hope, which I still really enjoy. I do know people are like, oh, this is boring. Like, but
I think A New Hope is pretty boring.
there are scenes in that I think are still a ton of fun. Like
Also,
any,
very iconic scene. Like the
yeah.
shot of like when he's walking on his home planet at the beginning, like it's
Yeah.
just an iconic shot. Like you know what I'm talking about, right? With like the sun setting, or I should say it suns, right?
Two
Like
sons,
over, yeah. I see, I know these movies for someone who's like very casual about them, I kind of know them more than I realize, but
I mean that they are things that like they're ingrained in our popular culture.
yeah.
Like whether you like them or not, you know aspects of Star Wars.
And you know what? To prove that point, and that's a point I made to Aaron as well. He's like, you know, that whole fucking like the at the end of Empire when it's like you find out that he's his father. It's like I'm like, dude, that scene has almost no impact now because it is ingrained in pop culture. And I go to prove it. I showed that original trilogy to my girlfriend, and she was not surprised at all by that scene. She was just like, yeah. Obviously, he uses his father. Like, she's never seen the movies, but she knew
Right.
that because Luke, I am your father, which is wrong, I
Right,
guess.
but that
Is
is
that's
like that's
everyone
how
knows. Yeah.
like whether you've seen it or not, you know aspects of the film, like you know that like, you know, Princess Leia has bagels on the side of her head. Like everyone knows that hairstyle and everyone knows who Darth Vader is and everyone knows what, you know, a TIE fighter and an X-wing are. Or a Jedi, like those are just things that are part of this culture. Like, and it's kind of why, like, I am happy that Disney has brought it back, and we are getting good quality Star Wars property out there. I mean, at some level, you're like, oh God, they could really fuck this up and go like the Marvel route where it's way too much. But right now, I am every year. I'm like, yeah, I just want one. Give me one. Like,
See,
I don't need three, but one. Give me one.
where I am at is with I would prefer if we didn't have the in-between movies. Like I would be willing to sacrifice Rogue One and it never existing, honestly.
Sure.
Like, because it ruins it for me. Like it's I can't be as excited, although I am pretty hyped at this point. To be honest, I'm pretty hyped for fucking Last Jedi because like it just looks really good to me. Like the trailers looked really good. Obviously, Disney is pretty pleased with whatever Rian Johnson did. Rian Johnson, I think, is pretty decent director. Like, I do think he gets a little overrated at times. Like, people talk about him like he's like this amazing director. I'm like, what has he really done? Like that movie Brick, I didn't think was that great. He did an episode of Breaking Bad. That's great. I love Breaking Bad, but apparently he did something here. So, I mean.
I mean, he did break. He did Looper, which was okay.
I liked Looper. Looper is pretty decent. Like, but like nothing in that makes me go, this is the guy you give. Or nothing in that makes me go, like, this guy's like this amazing director to watch. Like, it's just
Right,
like
like and like we should give like the biggest franchise in the world over to this guy
I mean,
for a
I'm
movie.
happier with him in his hands than I don't know, some fucking like Ron Howard. Honestly, I'd rather have Rian Johnson than a Ron Howard Star Wars, but
Oh, we're going to get a Ron Howard Star Wars.
I know that's why my mind went to that. I was like, well, like because Ron Howard's just kind of like a journeyman, like he could do the job, and some of his movies are pretty awesome. Like at least Rian Johnson is like an interesting voice, like you know he's got something
Right.
to him.
And he seems to know how to work with Kathleen Kennedy and Lucasfilm, which is where
Yeah,
it I
obviously.
think these other, you know, I mean, they brought on Lord and Miller for the Han Solo movie, and that didn't work. And Gareth Edwards, that is his name, who did Rogue One. They brought him on, and he stayed. He finished that film, but they obviously like made major reshoots, and edits to that film that to make it more, I guess, Star Warsy.
Johnson, instead of getting fired, he got a big
He
pat on
got
the
three
back,
new
and
movies.
he's three more, which I know you're saying, like, yeah, give me one a year, but like, to me, one a year kind of robs it a little bit. Although, like I said, like, to me, I would just kind of disregard Rogue One. I'm like, okay, that was cool. That was like for to tide people
Yeah,
over.
like to me, that's like Rogue One was, yeah, it's this side thing. Like, it's cool. It doesn't impact anything new. It just gets like it's like, I mean, if you read a Star Wars book or you play a Star Wars video game, it's kind of like impacts it in that way. It's not a numbered sequel.
Yeah, but it's just, even every other year schedule for the numbered, main whatever is like, I don't know. It's like, if I got a Mario, I guess if I got a Mario or Zelda every fucking other year, I guess I would be okay with it. But it makes it more special when I have to wait like 8 years to get a new Zelda, and it's amazing. You know what I mean? Like,
Right.
but anyways, I don't know. I guess last thought on this is, I'm fucking super excited for
Yeah.
Last Jedi.
Yeah, very excited myself. I tried to go on like media blackout on it, so.
so I'm for next week, we will have the last Jedi. I'm
Yeah.
thinking that might be probably one of those full episodes where we just do the one
Yeah,
movie and talk
probably
about it for
just
an
that.
hour. Yeah. Unless, like, I might mention, if I manage to see one of these other movies that I really am dying to see, I might mention those, but I doubt I'll be able to see them. I guess, Chris, are there any movies that you feel like you need or like would like to see before the end of the year, before we do our best of list? Because I got a bunch.
Yeah, I mean
Sucks.
that there are. I know I'm not gonna get to them though. Like, I mean, I'd like to see Lady Bird. I mean, I'd like to see drawn a blank on some of them, but like,
I, Tanya. Have you seen the trailer for I,
I,
Tanya?
Tanya is a story I'm really interested
It
in.
like the story is like interesting, but also like you could tell just by the trailer that like that shit is edited like a Scorsese film. Like a lot of like the zoom in fucking moments, and just like I just, it feels like it's gonna be one of those kinetic movies that you're just like, fucking, this guy's fucking, tap dancing all over this fucking movie. Like,
Yeah. I mean that I think we talked about this the last time, the post, but that's not gonna hit wide release until after Christmas. I kind of want to see The Greatest Showman. We'll see.
I have no desire for that. I want to see the Florida Project. I want to see, like you said, Lady Bird. I'm dying to see I, Tonya. Like, I will drive like a fucking half hour to see I, Tonya, I'll tell you that.
The Shape of Water is kind of one that's
Yeah,
out
like
there.
that one is firmly, I'm placing in the 2018 movies, because like that's gonna be nowhere until then, I don't think. There's just so they do this fucking every year, and it pisses me off. It's like, yeah, here in a 4 week span between like November and December are all these fucking movies that are going to be the talk of the town come Oscar season, but nobody's fucking seen them because they're nowhere to be seen.
Right.
I hate it. You know what? Put the fucking movies on demand or whatever, then. Let me fucking rent it VOD,
Which
whatever.
is what's like totally infuriating to me because the Golden Globe just announced their nominations, and to see it, you had to have been able to see the movie. Like, the foreign press had to be able to see the movie by the 5th of December. So The Last Jedi is not eligible. It is eligible because if they had given a screener over, they would have been able to nominate it, but Disney was like, "No, fuck you, people! Like, we're locking that shit down."
And the critics don't even seem to give a fuck, because the critics come out with their list December 1st. They're like, yeah, and despite the fact that a lot of them are gonna love Last Jedi, it's like it wouldn't even rank.
Yeah.
Personal Shopper is way too important to fucking waste the space on fucking
For
Star
a
Wars on your top
blockbuster
ten
movie.
list. Yeah, like, I just there's a lot of things that aggravate me about it, all that. Like, and it's not like I'm saying like, dude, one of those movies last year was La La Land. I fucking love that movie. I think it's, and I was so happy that I got to see it in the movie theater. It was a magical experience. But it's too often the case that it's impossible to see these films that are like, and there's total recency bias when it comes to these award shows. It's always like whatever came out in the last 3 weeks before fucking, and I know that the studios and stuff, they place that stuff, like the stuff that they think is the best in that time frame. But it's like to ignore the rest of the year of film. Like 10 years from now, if you looked at like top 10 lists, it would be as if fucking Split didn't happen this year or never happened at all. Like, it's just like, it was in
Oh yeah.
January, so who gives a fuck?
Well, and
Like,
the Big Six seems to kind of like
well,
get
yeah, I got snubbed
lost.
from the Golden Globes.
Yeah.
Like, The Big Sick is a film that, despite the fact that it's a romantic comedy, I think should be up for Best Picture. Like, I really do think it's that good. So, yeah, there's a lot of, I mean, that's just me getting off on another one of my rants, but I fucking hate it. Like, because I want to feel like I'm in the conversation about what was the best films of 2017. But I guess we're going to present the other side of that, of what people were able actually to fucking see in 2017. And remembering that there was stuff that came out before December fucking 1st. Like, I don't know, it really fucking pisses me off. But not to end on a negative note. And speaking of best of the year, so next week we will have Star Wars.
Yeah.
And after that, we will have our awards. We're doing going to do an awards show this year of like best this and best that. And our final show for the year will be our top 10, ending with movie of the year.
All right.
So get excited.
I am.
I'm actually super. This is like my favorite set of shows to do for the year. Between this and our video game podcast, like, it's just a really fun time.
Yeah, I like being able to do the recap, so.
Yeah, I just I love ranking and arguing about what's the fucking best, you know, what is number one, like, or whatever. So luckily on this show we don't have to come to a consensus,
Yeah.
but it's fun either way. Movie dudes.
Dudes.